I really want to reflect or give people the possibility of awareness around how much power and choice they can have.
Welcome to the Dr. Espen podcast, where we explore the latest in quantum science, personal development, consciousness and spirituality, health, as well as business and money mastery. Join me as I interview experts from all over the world sharing the most incredible stories of transformation. This is where we provide you with the exact tools and coaching activities you need to expand your consciousness in each of the 8 areas of your life. For more info on our events, programs, coaching, etc., go to drespen.com for the full quantum experience. Welcome back to the Dr. Espen podcast. I am Espen. Today, I have the privilege of interviewing Dr. Nicole LaPera, holistic psychologist trained at Cornell University, the New School of Social Research, and Philadelphia School of Psychoanalysis. She's the founder of the global healing community membership called Self Healer Circle, something that I want to come back to. How cool is that? The Self Healer Circle. And she's the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, How to Do the Work, How to Meet Yourself, and How to Be the Love You Seek. Now, before we jump in, I just want to say this book is a must read. I'm not saying that to plug the book. I'm saying that because I'm a dad, I'm a leader, I'm a man. And for me, that book is a must read. Today, we're going to dive into all kinds of amazing topics. Dr. Nicole's got 8.2 million followers on Instagram. And today, we have the privilege of being here with her and talking about how to be the love that we seek in our lives, where so much of our wounding can come from in terms of childhood traumas. We're going to talk about a lot of very powerful principles. So I want to say a very special welcome. Nicole, how are you today?
I'm so great, Dr. Espen. Thank you for having me.
It's a privilege. Thank you so much for taking the time. As I shared with you briefly before we started this interview, a large part of our network are indeed, I would say, holistic, certainly spiritual or spiritually curious. So I love how you've taken the science of human psychology, including the spirit, the human spirit of things, and you've taught us, and even through the book, about our neurology, about our breath, and about so many fundamental principles. I want to start by asking, for those watching and listening who might be thinking, I would like to improve my life, I'd like to get to know myself better, have better habits, whatever it might be, something that I speak of in my teachings also in terms of the imprint period, I'd like to ask, what impact does one's childhood, the way we were raised, our upbringing, our beliefs, etc., play on our current relationships in life?
Our childhood, in my opinion, as I've come to learn over time, based on my own experience and the clinical work that I would do with both individuals and couples, I mean, it really plays the most foundational role from essentially the way in childhood, the things that we were, you know, taught to think or believe about ourselves, ultimately over time into adulthood, becomes the beliefs that we continue to hold about ourselves, others, our relationships, the world around us. In childhood, the presence of or lack thereof of attunement around our emotions in particular. So really simply how we learn to be present to our own emotions and to navigate our own emotions directly then impacts into adulthood, our continued relationship with our emotional experiences. And in the most foundational level, the way in which we expressed ourselves, the things that we were taught were validated, valuable, both through direct and indirect messaging about ourselves, and the things that we were taught were not so approved of in terms of ourselves becomes ultimately the way we continue to connect or to show up or to present ourselves in our relationships well into adulthood. So at our core, really, the being that we are in terms of who we show up as when we are relating to other people is, in my opinion, a remnant or an artifact of who we once had to be based on the relationships and the circumstances that we were born into.
And I think, obviously, the first step to transforming any limiting belief or pattern or thought or habit or whatever to what we want it to be is the point of awareness and actually seeing it for what it is. Mm-hmm. how much do you see in your work with patients and with all the study that you've done? What percentage of a person's suffering or stress in current reality, they said this is a, you know, an average person, what would you say comes from childhood? And if it does, how does one deal with that? If they can't come and see you in clinic, obviously reading your book is a great start, but how much is the cause rather than the effect? And how does one deal with that?
You know, I think when we're, you know, thinking about, again, the impact of childhood, of our earliest experiences, for most of us, and when we're thinking about, I want to go back to even awareness or consciousness, right? We struggle to change really simply because of two main factors. The first factor, as you very wisely just kind of acknowledged, being we lack awareness, right? We are blinded, as I like to kind of describe, to ourselves based on our own lived experience, our own perspective. We can't see certain aspects. And sometimes we're even in denial based on the painfulness of certain aspects of our lived experience. So we lack awareness. And I think for a lot of us, that contributes to a large percentage of why we then can't change, because we can't change what we're not aware of or the role that we're playing. And a lot of us don't believe that we're playing a role because all of these habits are operating outside of our awareness. So the awareness piece, I can't say enough of how foundational that is, because without us seeing in real time the way in which our childhood is impacting us, we can't then take that second step, which is, I think, the next major factor with why we struggle to change. Because for a lot of us, the impact that we're talking about is what I call neurophysiologically wired into us. It's wired not just into the way we think, it's wired into the way our body physiologically operates, for lack of a better word. So I think when we acknowledge both of those reasons why, then I think the percentage can get quite high in terms of the amount of adults who are continuously impacted by their childhood, either because they lack awareness. And a lot of us think, oh, well, I don't want to go back there. I'm decades beyond my childhood. I'm an adult now. It's too painful. I don't want to think about it. Avoiding that awareness piece because it's simply too painful. And then I worked with a lot of the clients who fell in that second bucket, feeling just as disempowered because they had the awareness. They were looking and trying to understand themselves, but they were prevented because their body became so habitual and comfortable in certain patterns that no amount of insight or awareness would allow them to create the change that they wanted.
So what do you then need? A heightened, elevated emotion to change that state? Is that what you, how would you say, I mean, there's many methodologies, I'm sure of it, but what would you say are some of the methodologies for a person to go, okay, I get the fact that much of my suffering and programming comes from the imprint period, the way I was raised, my beliefs about reality. I've conditioned this for 30, 40 years because, you know, that was common and known to me. And it's, as you said, in the body. Once one has the awareness, what does one do? I mean, do you have methodologies to break through using heightened, elevated emotions, repetitive reconditioning? Talking whole neuro side here, but this is exciting because once one recognizes the wound, one becomes empowered to make the change. How do we make the change, Nicole? What do you think?
I think what's important to emphasize is the type of awareness that we're talking about, in my opinion, that allows us to build the foundation for change is present moment awareness, right? This doesn't mean after the fact, right? And this is what I would see with the clients I would work with, right? We'd have a designated hour during the week. And those were the moments where we pulled up all these insights and awareness and we explored, right, what thoughts were happening behind the scenes and interpretations of the event and then what emotions were happening. And then we would, from this, speaking to the neuroscience perspective, right, powerful frontal lobe of our brain with insight and awareness and can problem solve and create new solutions, right? That's when we're operating in that conscious state, able to then see a new solution. What happens for most of us, we leave that treatment room, we leave that meditative period, that moment of insight, and then we go right back to our day, governed by all of the habits and patterns in our subconscious mind. And then in real time, we lose access to our awareness, because to create change, we have to be in that embodied state of, okay, things are happening outside of me. Inside of me, there's also a lot happening in this moment. I'm having a running narrative or interpretation of what's happening, right? I'm now subjectifying what's happening. What's then happening in my body typically are sensations. My muscles are starting to tense or relax in certain areas, hormones, and I'm starting to feel a sensory-based experience. So if we're not conscious in those moments, then what will happen is the old habitual choice will almost seemingly be made for us, because that whole neurobiological pathway, right, the kind of neuronal, like, it's already off and running. It's already happening beneath the surface. So I want to emphasize the type of conscious awareness that we're talking about that allows us to make change is in the moments where our internal world is activated and it might contribute to the old habit. Because in that now new space of awareness, this is where, to then specifically answer your question, yes, there are conscious intentional choices that we can begin to make to express our thoughts, to navigate our emotional or our physiological experiences, right? If we're not having enough energy, we can stimulate our energy. If we're having too much energy, we can, and I'm really, again, simplifying all of this, but the answer is yes. In real time now, not only can I give myself access to new thoughts or new solutions, I can remember that beautiful, insightful new thing I want to do, I have the space and the access point to embody that choice. Because that, as simple as it sounds and as frustrating as it is for many of us, that's where change happens, when we begin to make those new choices. And we need to be in that very powerful, right, frontal lobe of our brain, and not in that very reptilian, emotionally driven, where all those habits and patterns live, emotional part of our brain, which is usually that autopilot that many of us like to reference. That's where all that reactivity lives.
You know, I'm all about tangible steps, real simple things that can be applied immediately. That's free. That's powerful. And you just nailed it. I just want to point out what I think what Dr. Nicole is really saying here, what I got from this. You know, I'm saying, okay, so if we recognize that so much of our thoughts, emotions, patterns, beliefs, traumas, whatever, current reality manifesting issues in our lives comes from, stems from, began at the imprint period, the earliest stages of life. The point is not what methodology can we use or this or that technique. The point is to catch it in the moment, to be aware of it in the moment, to be with it in the moment, and to see then how am I feeling? What's going on in my body right now? What's going on in my mind right now? All right. And then what is my breath doing? Am I breathing short and shallow? Am I constricted, holding back? Am I open? And then with that awareness in the moment, what a powerful tool, then move forward. And you may be even asking powerful questions, taking a breath before you reply, things like that. This is great. This reminds me, I was reading through that this morning, the part of your book where it says understanding the neurobiology of trauma bonds. And I loved it, because I talk about this to my students, and I use an analogy where I say, if you imagine a computer program, you're coding the program, you build the source code, and then we have life's experiences on top. When you observe this with your clients, and I want to get to the spiritual stuff in a moment, I'm coming really excited to go a little bit into the quantum field kind of conversation here. But before we do, let's look at that neuro side of things, that, because you mentioned the habitual side. You said it's in the body, right? It's conditioned, it's autonomic, it's there out of our awareness because we've been firing and wiring those patterns for so long. When someone comes to you, let's say they read your book, which is one of the fastest ways to really get results in this way, what is out of their awareness and what would be some of the first steps to take tangibly? Is it self-love? Where are we going here? I mean, I've seen this a lot in my work. Self-love is huge. Where would you say is something that you're noticing a pattern in humanity that could be observed at this point?
I'm going to answer in the most simplistic way. I don't believe the large majority of us, very few of us, let me put it this way, spend a consistent amount of time foundationally paying attention to our body at all. I mean, we live in a very overstimulating world in a very unnatural environment. Some of us have an endless list of obligations or things to be paying attention to outside of ourselves. Others, right, we have a very active, powerful mind. I mean, continuing to go back to that, a lot of us even think we're of service to ourselves by analyzing and thinking and reading and right, all of this kind of cerebral. We spend the large majority of time in our minds. Again, some of us thinking it's of service because I'm understanding myself this way. And very few of us are spending consistent time in our body to even attune to the reality that our body is having sensory-based experiences and is sending messaging just as much as our mind. Again, we used to give all of the power and accolade and attention to the mind that sends messages down, right? And can impact changing our thoughts, changes how we feel, ultimately what we do. Though equally, if not more powerful messaging, all of the while is coming from our body up. So again, I believe that the large majority of us, and the reason being why we spend limited time in our body, is because we didn't have the safe, secure environment and attunement that we needed in childhood to make our body a safe, approachable landscape. Because what's housed in our body, and again, this was mind-blowing information, even as a trained clinical psychologist who seemingly, right, is an expert in helping people deal with emotional issues, it took me until I was out of my program and did my own personal learning to really understand what an emotion, this word that I would throw around and was thrown around so commonly in my program, what it actually is. And learning that an emotion is physiology in my body, right? And so if in childhood, I don't have the presence of someone secure and safe with whom I can be present in my body and be present to my emotional experiences and learn through their ability to co-regulate or to soothe me when I'm upset, to learn over time then how to soothe myself, this equation then leads to the large majority of us as adults, like I just said, spending limited time, if any, in our body. So I can't emphasize enough how foundationally important first the awareness is, without shaming ourselves, to notice if you are like me, somewhere in my 30s, I discovered I've had no connection, even having been an athlete and being seemingly right in my body to perform for however many years it was that I did so. If you were to ask me, right, how I felt, what my body needed in terms of nutrients or rest or movement, I wouldn't have been able to fully answer that question, because the reality of it for me was my attention, just like many listeners, was so many different places, was worrying about people outside of myself, was lost in thought, because right here I was now an insightful therapist who's learning to even understand myself to be a better human. Yet what I wasn't doing was paying much attention or embodying myself, my body, my emotions. And I think, and again, I can't emphasize enough how simplistic this first step is, though how life-changing, because now I gain access in real time to very important messages, to things like you were saying, to how my breath is, to how my muscle tension is, to how my heart rate is doing. And specifically, it's not a surprise that you and I are both referencing those same pillars, because those are the systems physiologically that begin to change as my body becomes stressed or upset in an emotional experience. So now in real time, if I pay more attention to that, now I give myself a chance to do two things. A, avoid that old habitual reaction that will be the thing I always do when I'm upset or stressed in this way. And then in that space of avoidance, right, I'm breaking that old habit. Now I have that space of choice, like I talked about earlier. Now I can learn how to soothe or co-regulate with someone else, find the support I need to actually teach myself how to navigate my emotions. Because again, very few of us as adults, and this is not shameful, myself is included in this statement, we lack the ability to be with our emotions, let alone navigate our emotions when we're in relationship with someone else who's often having different emotions.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a range there, right? It's not like on or off, you lack or you have it or you don't have it. There's like this range of, yes, I'm becoming aware that I'm aware, and now I'm becoming more aware that I'm in my body. I'm about becoming more aware that I've spent more time in my body, and now I'm actually aware of my breath while I'm aware of my thought and in my body at the same time. I love this piece of emotion. I always say the quality of our life equals the quality of our emotion. I, like you or many other listeners or viewers perhaps, I was not raised in a family where a ongoing regular conversation about our emotions and about being in the body and about soothing the nervous system or even the awareness of such was even a thing. You know, born and raised in Norway, both my parents are alcoholics. my mother has passed, my father's still alive, and they did a great job, their best job. I mean, really seeing things from a spiritual aspect, the greatest gifts of my life was given during childhood because I realized that I am, for my own belief, a spirit having a human experience. I am consciousness experiencing this broad range. I went through those, the lack of embodiment, the lack of attunement, the lack of being with me and having the opportunity as a child to speak about emotions. I cannot recall a single time. And so the void then drives the value in me and I teach emotions. I love this. Okay. Just quickly, we've touched on the mental side. I love it. Let's get the neuro out of the way. We've got the thought. Now we're segueing naturally and beautifully into the emotion, not just the role that emotion plays, but I'd love if we can look at it from the aspect of creating meaningful, lasting change, apart from being in the body, somatically being present with what we're feeling, looking at the breath and the things that we've discussed. Tell us, what would you say when it comes to emotions, understanding them, and maybe even beginning to attune them or master them over time?
Emotions, not only are they essentially what colors our human experience, right? That's what gives us that ability to interface. I love how you're beautifully describing, right? This kind of spiritual, energetic self living in a human body, right? And then our emotions, we could really think about that as the crossroads, right? How we're registering the impact that we're having. In addition to that, again, this learning around emotions and physiology in the body taught me, and this goes into this idea too of like, you know, well, what are emotions? What is the purpose? There's a great, not only does it color our experience, there's informational value in our emotional experiences. And I say that because, again, I think that some of us have this idea or this expectation that emotions are somehow inherently problematic or to be avoided or dysfunctional, and or that we can create a utopian experience where we feel happy and joyful and that's it. And we kind of negate all of the other core emotions, which of course include sadness and anger and fear, right? So we can't turn off emotions and only keep some turned on, right? So to have access to all of our experiences, our emotional experiences, and then in particular, the information that it gives us, because there's value there, right? When we're feeling sadness or grief or any version in between, it's usually because it's indicating that something of value was lost, or at least there's a perceived loss of something that we value or we hold dear. When we feel anger, we feel anger typically because we're being actively violated or our needs are being actively unmet, right? This is important information in both of those scenarios. So some of, I think, the learning that we can benefit from in terms of emotions is just informational, right? Emotions have value, aren't to be avoided. And then, of course, the other part of that information is the embodied practice now of becoming aware of what our current relationship is with our emotions, right? Whether you were in a family like both yourself and myself where emotions weren't spoke of, though I can attest there was a lot of enacting of emotions in my family. There was moments of explosive emotion. There was moments of withdrawal and the silent treatment around emotions in terms of conflict in general, right? I think a lot of times too, conflict and emotionality that happens in conflict is a big learning where some of us, if conflict was explosive or we weren't modeled conflict, then we struggle to tolerate the emotions of natural disagreement and how to resolve then conflict with people. So this is nothing to be shameful of. Typically, our current relationship, again, with our emotions has been colored by what the presence of emotions and how they were navigated and tolerated. And more importantly, aside from the intention of many of our caregivers, because a lot of us grew up, you know, kind of promising that they are going to break habits of their own childhood, though, again, when we're talking about emotions, because we're talking about the physiological body, we're talking not just about their intention. And this is why very few of us as adults have had the level of attunement that we need. We're talking also about their ability. Do we have caregivers around us that are grounded and present in their own emotional experiences? Can they calm themselves down when they're upset so that they can then help calm us down, help us understand our emotions so that ultimately over time we can regulate it. And again, what most of us become aware of in adulthood is that we weren't given that learned, that learning, that embodiment practice. So what many of us are becoming aware of in adulthood without shame is the dysfunctional relationship that we have with our emotions that then again, with awareness, with these new tools to regulate our body, what many of us are legitimately teaching ourselves in adulthood is how to tolerate stress and upsetting emotions, how to be emotionally immature.
Whew. Probably worth going back and listening to that again. That was good. There was a lot there. And it really goes to speak to, again, to the somatic part or the motion being in the body and being in the emotion, being aware of the emotion. And for me, like I'm observing this as an interviewer, but also as a father, you know, how I am able to be with my 5-year-old son and let him and be aware of the emotion that he's experiencing and express the emotion and talk about the emotion. Cause I just love the fact that I know how to do that. And I don't know if our listeners, watchers, viewers do that enough. Maybe something you could tune in just from a place of observation, no judgment, of course. But have you taken the time to be with your loved ones? Firstly, be with yourself. We've talked a lot about this. So let's be real in the moment with your emotion, with your breath, you know, aware of the thought, aware of what you're feeling. Okay. And then to sit down with your children or at least to begin to observe perhaps what are they experiencing? Where are their emotions? There was an incident not long ago where my son had acted out. And it was so interesting because I had no idea why he was acting out and he didn't want to tell me. But when I asked him, and it took quite a while to, with me persisting to get through that level of the resistance and to be attuned with him. And then he said, because I had thrown out a chair that I had in the house. And he said, Dad, the chair that you threw out, that was our special chair. And I remember I had this, my heart just fell and then opened because it was so meaningful to him, this chair. But because I had thrown it out, buying new ones, basically, he had sadness because he felt that I had thrown out a part of our relationship. So it just goes to show for me that conscious conversation and really sitting down and being present and not avoiding and taking the time and discussing and talking about these emotions was a game changer for my son and I. And so then we, of course, you know, I had a cry and he was like, Dad, you shouldn't have thrown it out. And I'm like, oh, I should never have thrown it out. But now that I've thrown it out, let's buy some new ones. And we did, and we made a thing of it, and it was beautiful. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I had that, and I was attuned to that, and I was able to have that conversation because I felt there was something that he was not saying or sharing. And his behavior is emotional, the way he showed up in the world had changed. So I could see the signs and be with what was. I thought that was lovely. It was sad, but it was also really lovely. On that note, I want to segue and I want to ask, because I've seen the tattoo on your forearm. I work a lot with energy centers or the chakras. And now that we've covered the mental, the emotional, the neuro side of things in, I think, enough depth to get great results. And this is the thing. Go back, watch the interview again, take notes, breathe, feel, and apply as many times as you can, depending on how relevant this is for you, obviously. I want to go to energy now. And we talk about energy being emotion, energy in motion, everything in the universe is in motion, and lower frequency energies from some of my studies, you know, that they are more destructive, fear, guilt, shame, grief, anger, sadness, etc., compared to higher vibratory emotions, love, peace, joy, enlightenment, happiness, peace, grace, that sort of stuff. When we understand a potential scale or at least the emotions by itself, apart from being the language of the body, as we've kind of discussed, I guess we talked about spirit having a human experience. And as we segue from emotion, what have you found? And not just from a clinical psychological research perspective, not just from all the patients that you've worked with over the years and people that you've helped, but what is the core essence of spirit or spirituality, understanding energy when it comes to, let's say, living a magical life?
For me, and I think so much of my own journey, the way I think and teach, and obviously right now, is so informed by my inherent, as long as I can remember, I've been very curious and want to understand. And I love the science, right? I love to see. And so I share that because for a very long time, when I would hear words like soul or spirit or anything that coming from a religious conditioned household that didn't necessarily really align with what has now become my version of spirituality, I immediately would shut down to those conversations, show me the data, essentially would be where my mind went. So sharing that, because you wouldn't have heard me speak of my own spirituality or my own soul, or even I wouldn't have even possibly had a belief in that which can't be seen and measured until. And so the gift of learning about the body for me was beginning to learn about not only just the nervous system and all of this kind of energetic science, the quantum world. It was learning about, you know, our heart as an organ in particular. And because what I learned when I learned, and I'm so grateful for the science that's really kind of at the forefront coming out from the HeartMath Institute. When I learned about the power of our heart, and not only does it kind of expand its reach in terms of detection at a greater distance than that our nervous system does, and this is going back to emotions, as you brought up, our heart has the ability to physiologically coordinate the action of all of the systems of our body generally. And what I'm referencing is our heart rhythm. And again, on a spectrum, of course, it varies, and it varies really simplistically from what we call a state of incoherence, which can be and is measured when we have those lower emotions of stress, of conflict, of anger. We see a change if we were to kind of have a EEG of our heart, and the lines would look very kind of jagged, as opposed to if we were embodying a feeling of the higher emotions of care, of compassion, of love, then we actually see the shift and we get a smoother kind of sine-like, wave-like pattern. And this is so important because when we're in those states of coherence, right, our systems, our physical systems work more harmoniously. Our immune system is more resilient. Our nervous system is better able to deal with stress. In addition, of course, then to the signals of calm, safety, and security that we're sending out because of the embodied emotional vibration that we're in. So for me, that started to now give me some scientific validation and language in terms of, right, our energy, how it really is operating in our body and is translating to different physiological and emotional experiences then that we're having. And so for me, that was the biggest piece kind of the puzzle, in addition, of course, to the embodied journey then of me learning how to bring my own body from those jagged lines of spending the large majority of my energetic space feeling stressed or upset or dysregulated to some extent. Of course, learning how to create the coherence within myself and then obviously feel emotionally that impact. Because I want to just really quickly go back to that beautiful moment with your child, because what is happening for a lot of parents, right? We have the insight, the awareness, we know what we want to do differently in terms of creating a safe, secure base for our children. But if we don't, and if this isn't a case for the individual work for each of us, right? I don't know what is, but if our body is sending out, right? If we tell our child that I want you to be able to tell me anything, it's safe to tell me anything. But if when the child goes to tell us anything, they feel in our reaction, our overwhelm, or maybe in our statement where we shut down that child, then they're not going to feel the safety and the security to actually share and open up to develop the connection in the beautiful moment. So I want to acknowledge and use you, if you don't mind, as the descriptive example of that moment of coherence, right? Being in alignment, being able not just to say to our children, to give them the feeling of that safety and the security is going to be what creates that environment for the sharing, for the emotional intimacy to develop, for us to have an opportunity to regulate with them when they're upset. We have to meet them in their upset. So I want to acknowledge you and kind of the behind the scenes to just give listeners an idea of some language in terms of what we're talking about, marrying all these concepts together of the embodied space, of being in coherence, and then of the very real practical impact. Thank you for allowing me to use you and your son, right? That can happen when we embody these spaces because it is felt. And that's what we're all looking to feel in relationship, is that degree of emotional attunement and safety and security.
Mm. Thank you. Yeah, it was a beautiful experience, and I realized the result really came from overcoming his resistance of not wanting to talk. No, I want to play. I want to, and he, you know, he's bypassing. He's five, but I was bypassing also. And so, for me to come back to the present moment, to the breath. Now, let's talk about this, and just keep on being there and opening up and being non-reactive. I really noticed the big change in this nervous system. So, perhaps something that us as parents, or you know, people in general, could consider with the people that we love, showing up in that way and holding that space. I love how you brought up the HeartMath Institute and the research of heart coherence and brain coherence, and particularly pertaining to the field of energy, the Taurus field that is emanating from the heart field, easily measured with an ECG, the fact that the HeartMath Institute has been studying this for a very long time, and that there is a lot of good data coming out. So if you want to learn more about this, you guys can look up the HeartMath Institute as well. What role do you think spirituality plays in someone's life? I mean, for example, in my events, a lot of people are quite spiritually curious. I will ask my room if they were to close their eyes and to take a breath, and we go on this inward journey, and I give them two possible scenarios. Scenario one is that they believe that they're only flesh and bone, that they're only the body, only matter. They're only having a physical experience, and that's their belief about themselves. And or two, they believe that they're a spirit or a soul, a consciousness having a human experience more than just the physical flesh and bone. And maybe it's due to the nature of the message that we share and the spiritual scientific aspect that we bring. But 99% of our students will raise their hand and say, I believe that I am. And they'll write it down themselves. Some people write universe and God and spirit and soul and source and energy and quantum field, unified field, if you want to keep it scientific. But it's been really interesting to see a direct correlation between those who believe that and can then expand their energy to what they want to experience or attune, perhaps, compared to those who say, I'm only flesh and bone. And what I've realized, and I'd love your opinion on this, the people, the students in my clinics and across the, you know, the things that we do, that believe that they're only matter, that they're only the body, there is no spirit but this human experience and the five senses or six with thought, they suffer and live a lot more constricted lives in general, I'm generalizing, compared to those who have a relationship to spirit. What's your two cents worth on relationship to spirit, whatever that might mean for us?
Again, for me, this has been historically, right, a point of conflict, because immediately I would associate spirit, spirituality with the traditional religious system,
religion,
right?
Yeah,
that I was taught, or with any traditional religious system, and having found myself not necessarily in alignment with the spirit, the religious systems that, you know, I was exposed to, I then immediately was like, okay, well, this means that I don't have spirituality in my life. I couldn't figure my way or feel my way to that connection until, again, I learned the scientific kind of grounding of our energetic experience, which is in energy and in the unified field, right? Our connection. So to me, it allowed me to expand, learning even just the presence of the unified field allowed me to expand, or universal consciousness, whatever we're going to call it, allowed me to expand my definition of what spirituality could mean. So now for me, it means, and it can vary then in terms of the vessel, right? How in which we feel most connected to something beyond, right, who I am. And I think that then explains a lot of the suffering that we experience as humans, because we are born distinctly as separate beings. Right, so all of the evidence from the moment of conception, right, and we're born here, is that we aren't, and many of us are then validated, or messaging is validated from our families to our culture of how different we are from other people. And I think a lot of the suffering then, if we can't find our way back to any moments of connection, whether it be in a unified or in an organized religion, in nature, just having these moments where I'm just in my own kind of expanded consciousness, able to reconnect with that field, then I do think that contributes. And while, again, I don't have a percentage, I do think that research has over time consistently verified that individuals that lack any connection to any version of spirituality, again, my definition being something greater, then does suffer. Because suffering, again, I do think inherently comes from our felt separateness. So for me, expanding the definition allowed me to now find a place in my life where I'm able to be, and I see it just as an integral component as the mind that I live with, the body that I'm inhabiting in. For me now, that's kind of the third piece of how I would even define holistic, is also then the space to reconnect with that universal space, if you will. And again, for me, that comes in nature, that comes in moments of just, you know, kind of being in my own presence when I'm not necessarily distracted in thought, when I'm able just to kind of, you know, be with what I would call like source energy. And then we have those moments of insight and awareness. Other times it comes when I'm with people and I'm in moments of just joyful appreciation of whatever the moment is happening. And I kind of have that dissolving of boundaries and it's as if we're all just in the same emotional experience. So just some examples of, for me, what I define now is my spiritual space. And again, I agree that people who are able to find that connection back, right, outside of our aloneness, I do think are emotionally, you know, have benefit.
I love this. And again, you know, perhaps to those watching and listening, what do you call this, you know, what science would call the unified field? What do you call it? Spirit, God, source, universe, Allah, Buddha, Yahweh, Jesus, Krishna, whatever flows, right? I think what's beautiful is that there is scientific evidence over 100 years now, since Max Planck founded the quantum theory over 100 years ago, that there is a quote unquote field of divine intelligence that does indeed emanate through all of us, that does indeed by science also connect all of us. And I think now that the science is available, we can remove or start to dissolve this dogmatic aspect of religion, because I was the same. And I'm not saying religious is bad, you being religious is bad. If you're a Christian or a Buddhist, excellent for you, as long as it's a path of love, in my opinion anyway, you know, good for you. However, that creates dogmatic separation. 4,200 religions across the world, they can't be all be right, they can't be all be wrong. However, if we understand that there is a field that connects us, and that in our individual lives, to be with that field and to be with incoherence, I guess, is a key to well-being. Again, I just want to point this out. This is a great text to really get the attunement in the nervous system and the thoughts and the emotions and really understanding all the different aspects there, and then maybe even defining for yourself, what do I believe about spirit, a religion, dogma aside, what do I believe about me, and how can I nurture? Just quickly segueing over, chakras, energy centers, two cents worth, go. What do you believe?
Yes, I wanted to end because I realized you mentioned my tattoo. So for me, I have many tattoos, and most, if not all, of my tattoos have a personal significance. They're, for me, I use them as like a reminder, right? If it's on my body. So for me, I got the chakra tattoo when I was beginning to learn about energies and our body's energy system. So for me, it's my daily reminder to inhabit my body, that I'm in a body that has these, you know, very significant energy centers that are impacted by the world around me and that are impacting the world around me. So every morning when I wake up, put my hair up, there it is. And I need that reminder, because so much of my conditioning, like a lot of listeners, I'm sure, is not to live a grounded experience in my body from the moment I wake up until the moment I go to bed. My conditioned experience and, you know, has been otherwise to put my attention, and now I have endless opportunities of things that I love doing and I'm purposeful and passionate about. However, if I'm not right grounded in my vessel, feeling safe and secure myself, knowing even what my truth is that I'm going to go then speak and teach other people, if I'm not able to make sure that my body's needs are met and my body is regulated, I'm in that state of coherence so I can be in flow when I'm speaking, right, then I'm not going to be of service in the way that I want to be. So while I have a daily reminder tattooed on my arm, I will be the first to acknowledge and admit there are moments, times, even seasons where I fall back into old habits, where I don't honor my daily commitment to my body, where I let my to-do list or my emails take priority, or what someone wants or needs of me to go first before I care for myself. And then in those moments, it's not long before I see those old habits of reactivity, before I fall back into those old patterns in my relationship, before I start to feel really resentful of the world around me because my needs aren't getting met. And now, though, I have different language and new tools, and I can look myself in the mirror after those moments without shaming myself and say, okay, Nicole, you are now responsible for why you're showing up dysregulated, out of flow, and incoherent within the world around you. It's because you haven't kept those commitments to yourself. And then that opportunity affords me in that same moment the option of choosing myself, my body, its needs. And that's what I meant bringing this full circle about why consciousness in real time, in the moments, is so important. Because now I have the opportunity to say, you know what? Okay, maybe I fell off my habits. Maybe it's been 2 days. Maybe it's been 2 weeks. However, now I have an opportunity to re-engage, to take care of myself, to hit pause, to say no, or to do whatever it is that my body is telling me I need in that moment. Because what I will always have access to is that information in my body if I start paying attention to it.
Full circle indeed. Bringing back the tools we discussed in the beginning to give it example and to give it life. This is gorgeous. As we segue, I want to ask you a question, and this is really meaningful. I love intellectuals, and maybe if you're listening or viewing, watching this, maybe this is relevant for yourself. I love intellectuals that have come from a strong mind that can dissolve parts of the mind or see parts of the mind, tune into the emotion, and then tune into spirit and bring those three pieces together. I really feel, as you mentioned, as we've discussed, that they are all integral pieces of this, and then bringing it back to the moment. I've got one last question for you, and this is a question that I ask all the people that I'm blessed to interview, and we'll go straight off the cuff. You ready?
Let's do it.
Here's the question. Imagine now you've got the entire world. Every sentient being has gathered. They're still, they're present, and they're listening to your message to the world right now. Whenever you're ready, take a breath, tune in. Please do share. What is your message to the world right now?
My message to the world, I think this will remain probably my foundational message, is I really want to reflect or give people the possibility of awareness around how much power and choice they can have. And I'm sensitive to the many disempowered, powerless people who have been reacting from habits and patterns, some of us that have come from ancestors that are gone long before us. So I know this statement is hard to believe. So I'm not saying that you feel you have it, though. My intention for all of the work that I put out will always be a message of that empowerment, that choice is available, that we are greatly impacted by everything and everyone and every circumstance and every energy that's come before us. Though in this energetic space of presence, we really do have the tools and the keys and the access. And we now know we can even change our body and mind at any time. So my message is always one of choice. And the possibility of choice, even if it doesn't feel like that's the case right now. And again, that all begins, bringing it full circle again, another moment, when we become conscious to the choices that, again, are being made outside of our awareness every moment of every day by that autopilot that has been quite literally wired into our mind and body and has become our most familiar sense of safety, even if it's not translating into the life we want. When we become conscious, we can make the choices that will, over time, translate into that life.
I love that. And that's something powerful. We have free will. We can make that choice. And once we've made that choice, the path is just strengthened even further. I love that. So, ladies and gentlemen, there's a reason why Dr. Nicole LaPera has now reached 8.2 million on Instagram. And that's just one of the channels. The book, again, for me as a dad, for me as a business owner, for me as a man, how to be, not do, how to be the love you seek. There is a lot in this. Break the cycles, find peace, heal your relationships, and a lot more. Check it out, theholisticpsychologist.com. TikTok, same thing, Holistic Psychologist. Facebook, The Holistic Psychologist. Instagram, the.holistic.psychologist. I loved it. I was scrolling through your Instagram this morning, Nicole, and I was like, must take note. Must apply.
Note to self. I scroll by note to self, my daily reminder.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, great. So, you know, to also attune our nervous system is to absorb and tune in to the right information. Thank you for your experience of life and going through what you've gone through and questioning and learning and growing and healing and then sharing. Because right now we have the privilege as parents, as leaders, to be attuned and to pass that down the lineage to, I think, on the greater scale, yes, individually for ourselves, but together as a collective, we're seeing a change. There's emotional evolution and we get to be a part of this and change the course of humanity. I think this is incredible. And the more we do this for ourselves, the more beautiful our lives become. So thank you again for taking the time and for being here with us. Any final words?
Oh, of course. Thank you, Dr. Espin, for you and your work and how you share so beautifully. I mean, when we talk about the capability of the human, I mean, I don't think anyone's journey really speaks to that and the beautiful community that you've created around the work that you do. I was smiling ear to ear when you were saying that because I couldn't agree. I'm hopeful. I am so ever hopeful having opportunities to connect with people like yourself, my community, your community, all of the communities that are really learning this language on our own journey of evolution and beginning to embody it. I can't be anything but hopeful for the future that is to come. And I'm just so honored to be on this journey alongside all of you. So thank you all again.
Very special. Dr. Nicole LaPera, the holistic psychologist, look her up, follow, stay in the field, stay in her field, learn, grow, watch, read, and something's going to rub off and just be even more magical. Thank you again for taking your time. God bless you and everything that you're doing on your journey. Thanks for doing what you're doing, you know, for me and, you know, my son, but also for all of our patients and clients and humanity in general. This is amazing. Thank you very much. Once again, thank you so much for listening. And if you want to learn more about how to walk the quantum path into life mastery, business mastery, if you want to learn more about our live events or coaching or anything that we offer, go to www.drespen.com. That's DRESPEN.com or email info@drespen.com. And let's find out how we can help you take your life, your business, and your mission to a whole nother level. We'll see you next time.